Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is the King for Mayor. It's Wednesday night, and that means it's time for I Libertarian on the Talk Shoe Radio Network.
You are unmuted.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say that drop us to the sea. Confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Clown and dig my earth. None were level on the mine. Nobody up in his world.
All right, folks, it is May 11th, and normally I would start off with a news segment here. I usually do a 10-minute news segment, but since there is really nothing going on in the news, I mean, it's nothing you haven't heard before, and so I've created a news segment. It's called The News in 30 Seconds or Less, And here it goes. Put 30 seconds on the clock, and mercury is bad for you and causes autism. The TSA stuck their hands in a baby's diaper, and mainstream media is playing it off as cute and funny. The DHS is on high alert, and the TSA is no longer just at the airport. Real ID is locking in. Politicians lied and aren't going to do anything they promised on the campaign trail. And the Patriot Act looks like it just might be here to stay. And news of Osama bin Laden's birth certificate and Barack Obama's death have been greatly exaggerated. And that is the news in 30 seconds or less. And we're going to go straight to our guest for this evening. His name is Clint Richardson. He is from We Are Change, Utah, and he is the director of a film, documentary called Corporation Nation. Hello, Clint. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for coming on. You know, I've actually took the chance to read your blog this week, and you are definitely a man after my own heart. I'm very glad to have you on the show this evening. I was first brought to you were first brought to my attention from your film Corporation Nation, which I came across on YouTube, and before we go into what that's all about, can you just tell us how you got started investigating this topic?
Well, you know, I guess really my story, I guess, really started on 9/11. I was in New York and living in New York and watched the whole thing happen from my roof. And thought the whole thing was quite odd, and never really could figure out what was going on. And you know, as time progressed, I started listening to different radio shows, different radio personalities, and started figuring some things out. And for the last 4 or 5 years, I've been researching, sort of going past what I hear on the radio and starting to do my own, deep research, which, you know, I highly recommend to everyone. basically, what happened with me is I was a professional sound editor, sound designer in Hollywood, working on movies and video games and commercials and all that, and had what you might call a crisis of conscience, where I decided that I really couldn't be part of the propaganda machine that was coming out of Hollywood anymore. And as I was leaving, I contacted a gentleman named Walter Burian, who was on, I believe it was the Alex Jones show when I still listened to that. And, you know, I listened to this guy, and what he was saying made a lot of sense, despite the fact that I didn't have a financial background. And so I contacted him and offered my professional services for free, because he didn't have any funding and wanted to turn what he was saying into a documentary. So I got the privilege and the pleasure of meeting Walter Burian, and we made his last documentary, which was The Biggest Game in Town. And, you know, once I spent that week or so with him and was able to just sit there and pick his brain and figure out what he was saying in layman's terms, my whole reality kind of came crashing down upon me, because, you know, the realization of what's in that movie, you know, my movie, and as well as his, is earth-shattering. It changes your whole perspective, and it's also quite provable. It's probably the best thing about this is that it's right there. It's a federal law that these governments actually have to produce this report, which we'll get into. And so you don't have to question the source. You don't have to question what's happening. You can just pull up the report and see for yourself. And that's the beauty of this. And that's why I've steered myself pretty much primarily towards this subject. Now, I'll tackle a lot of other subjects, as you probably saw on the blog, but this is really the only thing that matters. And I, you know, this is why I'm doing these interviews and I'm doing these movies for free, because, like I said, this is earth-shattering, you know, mind-altering, reality-breaking stuff here. So, again, thanks for having me on to talk.
Yeah, No, I'm glad you're here. You know, when I first started watching your film, The Corporation Nation, I knew that it was true. I've always known that what you were saying was true. I just didn't understand the details of it. Like, before I even started watching it, I knew what you were saying was for real. And I had heard things about it before, and I could you can really, like, understand it just by paying attention to what's going on and doing your own research, like you said, which is always the best thing to do. But when you just made it so clear and produced all the documents for it, it really just, I was just so glad that was out there. So why don't you go ahead now and tell us what the Corporation Nation is and what it's all about?
Well, you know, the whole it's funny because that documentary, which, again, it's my first, you know, actual full thing where I did all the video and all the audio and everything else, really, that came out of nowhere because, you know, we went to confront that's what we do when we are changed. We go up and confront politicians and really enjoy it, really stick it to them, put them on the spot while in public, which is, you know, it's almost become a pastime, a hobby. And we get it on video and we put it on YouTube. It's kind of what We Are Change is all about. So I went up to this guy who I just had found out he was the Comptroller General, or he was the ex-Comptroller General, the Auditor General of the United States, so of the federal government, essentially, top auditor in the United States. And, you know, I'd learned all this from Walter and wanted to know what the heck was going on. So I asked him, and he just lied to me, you know, bold-faced. When I asked him about the corporate status, the corporate structure of the United States, which is very, again, easily verifiable. All you have to do is, if you're familiar with the Dun & Bradstreet website, it lists all corporations. You can find every government corporation there is. Cities, townships, municipalities, counties, states, etc. And that combined with a ticket that I got from the city, which blatantly, I got a letter in the mail for a parking ticket that I never really even knew I had, and it came from the Salt Lake City Corporation. And I'm just below Salt Lake City, but I got this letter from the Salt Lake City Corporation telling me that I owed them some ridiculous amount of money for a parking ticket I never got, and down there, you know, in the it's threatening me, telling me that they're going to take my property, in other words, theft of my property because I have some ticket that I didn't know about, and then it had the nerve, and this really got me. It said, "Please govern yourself accordingly," and I'm like, "Wait a minute. First of all, why am I getting a letter from a corporation? Why is my city a corporation? I don't understand." And so I did understand, but I didn't want to believe it, I guess is more accurate. And so I just started looking into it. And those two events combined angered me enough to start, you know, I was going to do maybe a half an hour movie. And then I just got into it and I couldn't stop. it just kept going. And so what we're talking about is, you know, you live in a city. Whether it's an incorporated or an unincorporated municipality, it is a corporate structure because you live also in a county and also in a state. Now, each of these entities are not a tangible thing on the surface. You cannot go and point out the border of your town, and you cannot point out the border of your county, and you cannot even point out the border of your state. There's no line, there's no wall, there's nothing there. It's not a tangible thing. So what we're talking about is what you might call a veil or artificial clothing, something that's been cast over the land, America, and each city and each municipality. Each one is a corporation, and this is very, it's a quasi-corporation, but it is still a corporation. Thus, my corporation that I live in currently is the Draper City Corporation. There's a Salt Lake City Corporation. Those are all housed within the municipality or municipal corporation called Salt Lake County, which is in the also the corporation of Utah, which is a federal district, really not even a state anymore. So we are a series of corporate structures, and to really understand what's going on, you have to understand that America, and I was corrected on my numbers by a state senator from New Jersey, actually. His name's Dick LaRosa, an ex-state senator who has come out and is blowing the whistle very, very proudly on this whole CAFR system. So we've got a state senator, an ex-state senator on our side now saying, yeah, the amounts of money that's within government is ridiculous, and it's hidden from the public through non-disclosure, essentially. So what we're talking about is over 200,000, probably about 230,000, actually, when you include all federal corporations, individual states, counties, cities, townships. They're all municipal corporations, all the way down to school districts, pension funds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everything is a separate government. And when you take all of those 230,000 governments, for instance, there's about 18,000 in California alone. When you take all of those together, you have what is called, or what we refer to as, collective government. It is like each one is like an individual piece of sand on the beach. And if you take all that sand and put it into one big bucket, you have collective sand, collective government. Now, I guess the real trick is is to try to figure out how much money and how much wealth and how much investment collectively the government has. It would probably take me 20 years to pull up every single report of all those 230,000 governments and actually get a standardized picture of what the wealth is collectively in government. So the best way to hide all of this wealth and all of this investments that we're going to talk about is through all of these individual governments, each one of them having their own funds that are not reported to the taxpayers, and each one of those is an investment fund. So each corporation, all 230,000 of them, each have individual investments into everything that you can imagine. So what we're going to prove by the end of this 2 hours is that government owns everything that you see. Every corporation is owned by government. If you have a Microsoft or an Apple computer, Microsoft, according to Walter Burian, is about 83% owned through stock investment by this beach of sand, these collective governments across the nation. So
let me jump in for a second, because if what you're saying is that everything is owned by the government, and I can kind of wrap my brain around that by the fact that, like with the auto licensing and all that, like there's that, possession is 9/10 of the law, and that 1/10 is the government actually owns the title to your car, and real estate. Nobody really owns the land. They own real estate. I get those kind of things. But to say that everything is owned by the government, like all these corporations are owned by the government, it's hard to wrap my brain around, because
sure.
I think of like the person who created the company. I think of the shareholders and the individual investors. Like if I were to start my own company right now, if I were to start a corporation, you're saying that it would be owned by the government?
No, not at all. You know, anybody can go out and start their own corporation. What you're doing when you're starting a corporation is you're simply attaching your corporate structure, and you're using your good faith and credit as a citizen of the United States, and you're creating a sort of what you might call an extension of yourself. You're creating a limited liability corporation, so where you're protected, The only thing that can have that can be sued is the actual corporation. It's an artificial person that's coming out of you. Likewise, as you were alluding to earlier, everything you do is not when you're conducting business with government, you're using your corporate veil, your social security number, your license to drive, everything is this corporate structure. When you declare bankruptcy, it's a really good example. What do you think is happening when you're declaring bankruptcy? You are not bankrupt. Your corporate structure, you, the artificial person that is you, is bankrupt. Okay? If you didn't have that artificial person and everything that you signed, all your loans and all your contracts, were not in that artificial corporate structure that is veiled upon you, then there'd be debtor prison.
Let me jump in for a second, because I know what you're getting into, and you're getting into the straw man, free man thing. And I understand it, and I know you understand, but I'm sure there's people listening who don't understand it. So why don't we go over that real quick?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty simple concept, and you don't really need to understand the whole thing. You just need to understand that when you enter into a contract, whenever you sign any type of loan agreement, when you get a credit card, when you get a driver's license, when you get any type of identification, you are supplying your corporate structure, which you can call a straw man. Straw man simply means an artificial person, essentially like a scarecrow, a man of straw. And each of us has this structure that we conduct business with the government, and with each other, actually. So when we are being sued, when we are suing someone else, we are suing that artificial person. We're not actually suing, I can't really do anything to you individually as a person, because I can't, you know, you're not, it's really hard to to put it into a concept that's understandable, because again, it's like a border. There is no border. It's an illusionary thing. Likewise, a corporate structure is not it's not necessarily a tangible thing. It's something that you conduct business with. So when you declare bankruptcy, and this is the best example to understand it, your corporate person, your straw man, is the thing that is going bankrupt. So your social security and everything that is tied to that, all of your credit and everything, when you get a credit report, you give your social security number, which is your pretty much your corporate ID. When you declare bankruptcy on that, you are essentially saying that my corporate structure is bankrupt. I'm going to start over with a new one, or I'm going to wipe this one clear. Now, important about that, what's so dastardly about that is that these companies, when you default on a loan, when you default on a credit card, anything that you default on, well, you know, it turns out that these guys are making a fortune off of you when you default. Some of these companies, I believe, would actually rather have you default because they write it off. Not only do they write off the loan amount, let's say you have a $10,000 loan, but by the time they go through collections, they add their fees, their late fees, their collection fees, and everything else, that loan, without you even knowing it, can get up to $50,000 on a $10,000 loan. And that is what the company writes off. They are making a killing off of you going bankrupt. So
yeah, I have no doubt about that. That seems to be the goal with all these crazy loans and things that are going on right now. And it seems like the more somebody is apt to pay it, like the harder that they barrel down on the person to try to get them into that situation.
Yes. Well, this is why they go to schools with these new students who have no credit record whatsoever, and they practically give these credit cards away to these students, and they go crazy. They buy donuts and coffee and alcohol, and they charge that card up, and all of a sudden they're in instant debt. And that's the whole purpose. That's the whole game. Because you're either going to pay that debt off slowly, or they're going to charge it off. And either way, they are winning, because they're either getting interest, or they're going to charge it off. And again, it's what we're talking about here is a concept that needs to be understood, and that is usury. Usury, you know, if you research the word, you'll see that every major religion is completely against usury, aside from one, which is actually Judaism. But usury is so frowned upon because you're making money off of money, or you're making money or a profit off of something that's already intangible. Therefore, new money has to be created to pay the interest on the old money. This is how the central bank works and the Federal Reserve. You know, the amount of debt that America owes to the Treasury through the Federal Reserve is ridiculous. And this is usury. The whole banking system is set up.
This is how these bubbles get created, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. No, but you got to understand about bubbles and you know, anything that happens in the stock market and anything that's happening out there. There is absolutely no randomness to what's going on. It's a very important to understand. There is nothing that is not in the control of these people who are in these high places. And the reason that I say that, I'm just going to go over a couple pension funds here. The good thing about pension funds is that they list in their comprehensive annual financial report, which is the reports we were talking about earlier.
Is the basis of your movie.
Yes. Consider these reports sort of the Achilles heel or the crippling entity of these corporations, because the federal law says every corporation in the United States has to file a comprehensive annual financial report, a CAFR, or something similar. Sometimes they call it a financial statement. Sometimes they call it just an annual report, but it is always the full report, the full budget. And so when we look at pension funds, they always list their top 10 or top 20 holdings, equity holdings, which means stock. And so when I pull up the CalSTRS pension fund, I'm just going to read you the top 10 holdings of CalSTRS. And you've got to consider that this is only one of 230,000 different governments across the nation. Pension funds probably hold about 25%, I would say, give or take, of the wealth of the country. So let's just go through this. All right. So a good example before I do that, actually, this is very important. This is what I've been trying to make people understand, is that any question that you have about why something is happening, okay, you want to know why the BP oil spill or the Exxon Valdez oil spill was never really cleaned up. The government never stepped in and said, you must do this at any cost. You must clean this up for the good of the people. Okay, you want to know why Microsoft and Apple are the two largest and only real, you know, they have a trust. They're essentially our computer providers. You want to know why all these pharmaceuticals are so big, why the government gives billions and billions of dollars to pharmaceuticals just for research and development without any proof of that they've cured anything. You know, you want to know why banks are allowed to do what they're allowed to do, why they can charge so much interest, why they're allowed to do just horrible things to people while government sits back and watches. Well, all of these questions can be answered by just looking at a few of these pension funds to see where the ownership of these corporations is. So here's the CalSTRS pension fund. Now, this pension fund has somewhere close to $130, $140 billion in it. Okay, $140 billion in investments. On their largest equity holdings as of June 30th, 2010, we have ExxonMobil Corporation, with 17.8 million shares at a market value of $1,017,000,000. Okay, so here we see that government has massive, just this one little government, this one grain of sand, has massive investments in Exxon Mobile, this company that has wreaked havoc on, you know, at so many points in history with their oil spills and everything else. Why is the Exxon Valdez spill and other spills from BP to any other international corporation that's in the oil business, why are they not cleaned up? Because it would be unprofitable. That is the answer to every single question you can imagine. Okay? When you talk about Monsanto, okay, same thing.
Yes.
Millions and
millions
of dollars.
Please talk about Monsanto.
Yeah, boy, could we. Millions and millions of dollars in just one fund, one government fund. So you understand that when you take these funds and these government investments collectively throughout all the nation, you start to understand, oh, well, I see. Government owns these companies because it's the main shareholder. If you look up the definition of being a shareholder or a stockholder, it is ownership in the company, plain and simple. If you own 1% of the stock in the company, you own 1% of the company. Okay? So we have ExxonMobil ownership in just one government fund of over $1 billion. Okay, if that doesn't strike you as nuts, I don't know what will. Then you have
let me pose a question to you real quick, mm-hmm. since we're talking about this. So the government's got all this money invested into these stocks and companies in the form of shares, mm-hmm. And a lot of it's through pension funds. And so these pension funds, they're drawing money as shareholders. With the, I forget what they call it, at the end of the year when there's money left over, the shareholders get money. And then they also own the shares themselves, which they could, if they needed to, sell at any point. And they're collecting all this money for the purposes of these pensions, yet when they go to pay the pensions, they put it into the federal budget and they expect the taxpayers to pay for it. Is that correct?
Yeah, essentially. What you're talking about, when you're talking about the pension fund system, and now people aren't going to like this. Pensioners are not going to like this, but it needs to be discussed, because what pension funds are a massive, massive suction, a massive whirlpool that is sucking the population dry, because what you have is, you know, you think of a pension fund, you think that employees of the government are contributing their own money into a fund, that money is getting invested, and at retirement they get paid a certain amount according to the actuarial values and all that. But the truth of the matter is, I mean, I've found pension funds now, some of them are non-contributory. That means that employees don't put a penny into the fund, and it's all taxpayer money going into the fund. So you can find funds where the employees are paying, say, $1 billion into the fund, and government is paying $4 billion into the fund. Well, whose money is that? When you say government is putting that money into the fund, who funds government?
The taxpayers?
The taxpayers, yes. This we're talking about the biggest funnel of taxpayer money. And just to hit this home and to make you understand what I'm saying here, because it's not the employees' fault. They don't really understand what's going on. They just know that they're contributing to something or not contributing to something, and they're getting a retirement as part of the benefits for working for the state. I mean, who wouldn't want that, right? But the discussion has to come and be, in the limelight when you learn that the federal government in 2010 spent more money on pension funds, taxpayer money, to meet its obligation for pension funds, more money than the defense budget, over $1.1 trillion of taxpayer money, not employee money. Taxpayer money went into these pension funds, and that's the federal pension system. Okay? So you, me, and everyone else out there are being taxed to support that over $1 trillion to go into pension funds to make these type of investments that we're talking about. One other way to look at this and to really understand, I have the post office, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, which again is the full accounting of government. It is the full budget. The budget reports that people see every year are only tax reports, so that the taxpayers pay a certain amount and government reports that it received that tax and then spent that tax. The Comprehensive Annual Financial Report is everything else, all of the investments and everything else, which is not reported to the taxpayer. So when I read the post office, the United States Post Office Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, it says that the post office has reached the limit of its borrowing to stay in business. It is now, it's now insolvent. It cannot borrow any more money. It has requested from the Senate, the Congressional Judiciary, I can't remember what it's called, but it requested from them to relieve them of their pension fund obligations, because this year the pension fund system is now $13 billion in the red, in the hole. And that, as they say in their pension fund report, it's because they cannot meet their pension fund obligations. So the post office is going out of business because it owes $5 billion for 2010 to the pension fund system. Okay? Over the years, that debt, that obligation that the post office must pay of taxpayer money, not employee money, is what has driven the post office to the brink of being out of business. It has reached its limit of borrowing to stay in business. I mean, this is patently ridiculous when you think about it, because this is only benefiting federal employees. That's it, just the employees of the post office. And this is going on in every federal institution, every government across the nation. You know, if you live in California, you've got the CalSTRS, you've got the CalPERS, which are the two largest funds. Then each city from Los Angeles to San Francisco and each county from Los Angeles to San Francisco has their own pension funds, each of those siphoning off just billions and billions of taxpayer money. And the taxpayers do not know this is happening. They do not know that this is pretty much the main reason that we are being taxed to death, essentially.
Now, I just want to make sure I understand this correctly, because what it seems to me is that they are collecting taxes, right? And then they have their budget, which includes these pensions that they have to pay, and they're not collecting enough taxes to pay these pensions, yet they have all these investments that they're making money off of. And so if they're not reporting the money that they're making off of these investments, and they're using our taxes and borrowing from, you know, the Federal Reserve or whoever to pay these pensions, then what are they doing with all that money from the investments? Where is that going?
It's
getting that.
That's the most important part, is because this wasn't designed to be a retirement fund. This is a system that was designed to eventually get so powerful, to put so much money into these government funds. And it's not just pension funds. It's every single city has a golf fund and a water fund and all these construction funds that each have these types of investments, whether it's invested in securities or derivatives or anything else. The important aspect of this, again, they're building a power base. It is a mutual sort of conglomeration between business and government. And what is happening is a thing called corporate governance, which is the next, you know, once you understand what corporate governance is, you get an idea of what's happening. You know, again, those questions of why things are happening, why are they putting so much money into these pension funds? Well, the truth of the matter is these pension funds are the equity in the fund is not the employees, as we just discussed. there's more taxpayer money generally going into the pension fund system than there is employee money. And so if an employee opts out of the pension fund, they can only get their money. They cannot get the money that government matched or paid extra for them to be in that fund. And likewise, some of these insurance funds like cancer insurance and fire insurance and life insurance that government has are all non-contributory, meaning employees contribute absolutely nothing. It's all taxpayer money going into these funds. So with corporate governance, and I highly recommend anybody listening to, well, watch the movie that explains it a little, but look up that term and understand what it means, because corporate governance simply means that as majority stockholder, with through all of these corporations, all of these government entities, over 230,000 of them across the country, they are all, they're all committing, I consider it a crime, I don't know about you, but they're all voting, because they are the main shareholders, they're the majority stockholders in each company. So you'll find that CalSTRS, for instance, because it owns, $1 billion of Exxon stock, $786 million of Apple, $630 million of Microsoft stock, $575 million of International Business Machines, $571 million of Procter & Gamble, $559 million of Johnson & Johnson, and very important is $534 million, 14,606,000 shares of J.P. Morgan Chase. Oh, you know, if I look at these reports, I see always, almost always on the top 10 list of stocks, J.P. Morgan Chase, your Bear Stearns, your Bank of America, your Wells Fargo, and your Citibank, almost constantly in the top 10 list of the stocks that government owns. AT&T.
Right, and then those banks in turn own BP and shares of Microsoft and Apple and all these other guys.
It's a collaborative effort, but you'll see that government owns the banks. And so when we get angry at these corporations, when we get angry at the banks because they're doing this horrible interest and they're seizing our property, well, you think, well, why isn't government stepping in and saying, wait a minute, you can't take those problems? No, banks are the weapon of choice for government. Government owns collectively controlling stock in each bank. Again, $534 million of J.P. Morgan Chase here for the CalSTRS pension fund. That's a huge amount of stock. And so what we're saying is that through this thing called corporate governance, the main shareholders of the company all receive votes for what happens within that company. So when a bank wants to do something or change the CEO or change, open or merge with another bank or anything, it cannot do that unless it receives permission through the proxy voting process from the main shareholder. Who's the main shareholder of J.P. Morgan Chase, Apple, Microsoft, Exxon, Chevron, BP, all of these national and international corporations? You find it is government. So government is literally voting on such things as mergers and acquisitions. It's voting how much to pay each CEO and board of directors for each company. It's voting on everything that happens within that corporation. You think that Bill Gates runs Microsoft. No, you're sadly mistaken. Bill Gates is not the majority shareholder. Government is. Bill Gates is just the figurehead, just like the President of the United States is the figurehead. So we're talking about what we're really getting to here is what I'm trying to make people understand. This is the worst conflict of interest that you could possibly find in the world, because you have government as the majority shareholder, meaning they own the company because they are the majority shareholder, stockholder, of all corporations that have any significance to you and me. Now, your personal, little corporation that you might open to sell hot dogs on the corner, they don't care about that. So you can open as many little corporations as you want, but once you get to a certain point, and once you get into public offerings, you're going to get bought up right away by institutional holdings. When you see institutional investments, that's always government, almost always. And so, again, a conflict of interest so vast because the owner of the corporations is also setting the laws and regulations for those corporations to operate both nationally and internationally. So you wonder why banks can charge as much interest as they want? Well, it's very profitable. It makes the bank a lot of profit. And so as majority shareholder, government is not going to change that. Why would government, knowing that vaccines are toxic and are killing people and creating autism, as you alluded to in the beginning of the show, why would government be interested in promoting such a thing? Well, vaccines are the bargain basement technology of the 20th century. That was said by a guy from Merck who created the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. Why do you think mandatory vaccines are just over the hump? Because vaccines are extremely, extremely profitable. Extremely profitable. And so when I look at the top 10 international equity stock holdings, I find such companies as Novartis. Here, the Texas Teachers Retirement Fund has 118,622,000 shares of Novartis. Okay, just one one government has that many shares in Novartis. Teva Pharmaceutical, 99 million shares. It just goes on and on. Every corporation you can think of is literally has this massive amount of government ownership. So again, conflict of interest, government is is literally passing the laws that its investment-owned corporations operate within. Why do you get poisoned milk? Why, any question you can think of. Oh, well, it's because government owns that corporation, and it's not going to do anything to harm its profit margin. It's simple as that. It's simple as that. And once you understand that, everything changes.
Yeah, and that it is. It's a total game changer once you can, firmly establish that in your mind. Now, here's my question. As you say now that the governments are corporations, from your county governments to your state governments to your federal government, they're all corporations in and of themselves. So who owns those corporations? Who are the shareholders in those corporations? Who's making the money off of the government?
That is perhaps the hardest question for me to answer. I have come to learn from Walter that government doesn't necessarily, it's not a corporation. Like a public corporation, when Microsoft went public and started offering stocks, those stocks then began being bought up by government and institutional, funds and mutual funds and all of that. Now, government corporations, because they're sort of a in-between sort of type of corporation, they're not the same type of corporation. This is the hardest part for people to really get, because what's really happening is, how do we explain this? This is a case where everybody says, wow, the government's really screwing us, or they are really screwing us. Everybody likes to say they are evil. They are, but it turns out that really what's going on is that they are us. We are the government. The people that are in government are people just like you and me who have learned how to manipulate other people and industries and countries around the world to gain a massive profit. So when you ask who is benefiting from this, it's a mutual beneficial construct, because the corporations are benefiting because government's on their side. They own the corporations. The highest of high government officials are benefiting. Let's just take a really good example here. Now, on my blog, I wrote not too long ago, I wrote an article called "The Senate: How Much Does It Cost?" Because as I was going through some of these reports, I found what's called a appropriations, outlays, and balances report, meaning how much the gets appropriated for certain things, how much gets spent, and then how much is left over. Appropriations, outlays, and balances. And what I found, it just floored me. And actually, it's kind of funny because what happens in the Senate is that they have something called the Senate Appropriations Committee. And what they do is these top senators get together in the Senate Appropriations Committee and they appropriate money to themselves. That's what the Senate Appropriations Committee is. Now generally, if you're in a corporation, you know, you'll write a request and the whoever gets that request will say, well, you're going to need exactly this much money, and if you need more, then you'll write another appropriations request. Well, in this case, the Senate is giving themselves as much money as they want. And so you'll find, if you look at this report, you'll find such things as the Senate Hair Care Revolving Fund, where the senators can go get a haircut for free, and they tap this fund that is built up. Now, every fund is always an investment fund. This particular fund for 2010, they used $33,387 for haircuts. And so about $333 in taxpayer money for each senator. You find, and then you find that left over in that fund is $261 million. For haircuts. And
so there's leftover money, huh?
Well, yeah, because what they do is they appropriated a massive amount of money for the fund. They use just a little bit of that money, and then everything else gets invested. That's why it's called a fund. If it's not in a fund, it'll be in a bank account, and because that money was not spent, they will shift it over into another fund, and it'll never be seen again. You have the Senate Restaurant Fund, where they wine and dine lobbyists for $72,000 and a remaining balance of $49,000. So another $1,000 per senator. You know, they've got the health care fund for their health facility. They've got mailing costs. They've got the gift shop revolving fund with $2.9 million in it. Photographic studios. It goes on and on and on, just these funds. But then you get to the nitty-gritty, and this is where I'm trying to answer your question in a different way than you know, just saying it's us screwing ourselves. The people that are benefiting from this, here's how they're benefiting. Okay, one of the things in that report was called contingent expenses, senators' official personal and office expense account. Okay, for the Senate. Now keep in mind, there's only 100 senators. So for each senator, this is ridiculous. Each senator, they have appropriated for the year 2010 $422 million for use in personal expense accounts. These are personal tax exempt expense accounts. Okay? So a senator might say, well, you know, I don't get paid very much to do this. I'm doing it because I'm patriotic. Well, that's a bunch of BS. They're doing it because they get a massive multi-million-dollar tax-exempt expense account that they can spend any way they want. So of that $422 million, the report says that $400,590,000 was used in or by the senators for their personal and office expenses. Okay? So that's about $4 million per senator. Now, we find that senators buy vacation homes in the Bahamas, or take ridiculous trips and wine and dine lobbyists. They do all kinds of things with this money that is tax exempt, tax free money. They can spend it any way they want. The account that holds this appropriated money gained about $13 million because they didn't use that extra $22 million or whatever it was, leaving the ending account balance for the fund of $81 million. So $81 million is sitting somewhere being invested. And meanwhile, the Senate Appropriations Committee is going to meet again for this year, and they're going to appropriate another $422 or maybe $450 million for the next year. This is how politicians are benefiting from this thing. It's not a shareholder. The government doesn't necessarily have shareholders. What you have is a mutual corruption that is going on that the people do not understand, but that these guys in high places are, as you can see, benefiting from greatly. I mean, a $4 million expense account, tax-free, where you can buy a second home or a third home, where you can buy anything you want. I mean, that
so,
is...
So this might explain perhaps why all these candidates are all, you know, hopes and dreams and good intentions on the campaign trail, and then 6 months later, they're, you know, just another one of the jerks again, you know.
Absolutely, you know, and don't forget, these guys all get pension funds. You know, the reason that people want to be a congressman and a senator is because you're set for life. You get free medical for life. You get a pension fund the rest of your life. You get all of the money that you made in your expense account, and Congress is guilty as well, because Congress has the outlay report. I didn't get into it, but it was about $1.4 billion for Congress's expense accounts, tax exempt expense accounts. And so, yeah, it's these guys are benefiting in ways that you can't even imagine. So, in answer to your question, what we have is a situation where in the corporate world, in order for you or me or these politicians or anyone else to get ahead, you must essentially sell your soul. You must make your – you must do business on the backs of the taxpayers. You must be a part of corruption. You must give up all ethics and morals and values if you ever want to get ahead in any type of corporate situation. So if you're working for a major corporation, chances are you're never going to become the boss unless you are cutthroat, unless you are willing to just really damage other people to get there. Likewise, this is the definition of what government is doing to the people. We are screwing ourselves. When we say that the government is hurting us, don't forget, we elect that government, or at least we think we do. Those people that are in government are you and me. They're people just like you and me. They are just people who saw opportunity, and it came knocking on their door, and they stepped up, and they're using that opportunity to get rich, to invest, to do these things on the backs of the taxpayers, on the backs of people who have no idea this is happening. So my answer to your question, and that's, again, the hardest question to answer, is no, there's not shareholders in government. I mean, you could look and you know, get into the whole theory of the Vatican owning England, which still owns us. Well, that's a whole different conversation.
Right.
What you've got is we're screwing ourselves. And that's the hardest thing to really – it took me a long time to be able to actually sit there and say, you know, that is what's happening. This is what's happening. People are doing this to people, and that is what's got to stop. That is the sort of crisis of conscience that I had when I was sitting there in Hollywood working on all this propaganda, all these great video games and creating all these demons and monsters and everything. And then I hear, you know, these things that just, they make me stop and say, I can't do this anymore. I have to be on the side of good, on the side of light, and try to make some good out of this whole situation. So I hope that answers the question. It's a really difficult question to answer.
Yeah, you know, and just let me tell you, I totally feel you, my friend, because I worked at a major corporation that did video games, and I understand the whole cutthroat. You really have to be willing to step over, you know, your friends and coworkers and stab people in the back to get ahead. And it really is a horrible thing, and I think that's part of the reason that drove me away from it and forced me to drive clear across the country one day. Let me ask you one more question, and it might be a little bit of a loaded one, but after that question, what I want to do is I want to take a quick, like, 3-minute break, and then I want to get some questions in from the audience if they have any. I'm hoping I see Kevin Tinfoil in the chat room, and I hope he'll call in, and because I think he if he's still listening, he's enjoying what you're saying and has some things to say about it. But let me ask you this. As I understand it, and a lot of people understand it, is that when this country was founded, that, you know, it was a country, or it was actually multiple countries that came together to form a super nation, if you will, that was, you know, just a government and a state and a nation. As I understand it, at some point it changed into a corporation, and I was just hoping if you could clear that up for me or other people before we go to break here.
Well, I mean, basically, a lot of people refer to the Act of 1871. The Act of 1871 actually took the existing municipalities of Washington, D.C., and there were three of them, and I can't remember the names, but in the District of Columbia, that 10-mile stretch of land. And basically, it joined the few municipalities that were there into one municipal corporation, Washington, D.C., the federal government. But it goes back even further than that to actually something called the Act of I think it's called the Act of 1801, so 1801, where those three municipalities that the Act of 1871 created into one municipal corporation, these were created apparently by this charter in 1801. So this is the setup of Washington, D.C. Now, you can do all the research. I put all this on a blog entry on my blog called The United States, a Corporation. You can go down and you can read a lot of this stuff on there. I've got so much information on this particular article that really, you know, blows your mind. One of those things is, you know, as of late, you know, as of the last 6 months or so, as I've really started looking into things, I've been actually reading the Constitution. I've actually been not just referring to what I've been taught and this whole patriotic thing about the Constitution, but I've actually been reading what the Constitution says. I got to be honest with you. I am absolutely shocked at what I'm reading. The Constitution, and I don't want to offend anybody, but you got to go read that thing because it's horrible. Some of the things in there are, just to give you an example of what I'm saying, you know about eminent domain and what eminent domain is. Well, eminent domain is when the government can take your land, okay? They take your land. That does not sound like freedom to me. That this is the federal government coming in and taking your land. The federal government's only supposed to have jurisdiction in its little 10-mile stretch of land in Washington, D.C. And remember, Washington, D.C. is not a United State. It is a separate piece of property, a 10-mile stretch, that is neither part of the United States, and it is not, it's a completely separate entity. It's a private corporation. Just like the Vatican is not part of Italy. It is not part of Rome. Just like the City of London, which is the banking square there, which is actually smaller than Washington, D.C., is actually its own private corporation. It is not part of England. It is not part of London. It's called the City of London, but it's really called Banking Row, where Rothschild is the mayor of that little city. But if you read the Constitution, let me just read the Fifth Amendment to you, because, you know, once you get this, you're like, wait a minute. Nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property. Sounds good. But the next thing it says is, without due process of law. So what this says, basically, is that you can be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against yourself, and you can be deprived of life, liberty, and property, very important, property, with due process of law. So you change the words around, they mean the same thing, and you say, wait a minute, that's not good. Then it says, nor shall private property be taken for public use, comma, without just compensation. So in other words, private property can be taken for public use with just compensation. I mean, read the Constitution. It'll frighten you when you actually realize, hey, this isn't what I thought it was. You can read the 13th Amendment, which actually makes slavery legal, not illegal, legal. The 13th Amendment actually states that slavery and indentured servitude is now against the law, except in cases except in the case where you are convicted of a crime. So wait a minute. Slavery is illegal for the people, but the state can enslave you if they convict you of a crime. So when you start reading the Constitution and you actually sort of change it around, you see that this is something really different than what you thought it was. And it takes actually sitting down and really contemplating what the words state. Because almost in every instance where you think it's granting you a freedom or it's granting you what people call a right, it's actually not. It's actually taking away your right with a clause. And it'll say, except in this case, or except as punishment for crime, or or if we pay you a certain amount of money, we can take your property. The whole thing, the whole structure of America is so different than what we've been sort of grown up to believe. The blind patriotism that we've been kind of led to follow. But again, read the thing. It's going to scare the heck out of you. And so the corporate structure of America, it boils down to that Act of 1801 and the Act of 1871. Those, again, those are up on my blog. You can, the United States, a corporation. And it goes, there's so much information on that I'd rather just people read it and get the actual
document.
Yeah,
why don't you go ahead and plug the web address for that?
Oh, my blog. Yeah, it's Reality Blogger. So Reality Blogger with one G, so BLOGER, .wordpress.com. Realityblogger.wordpress.com.
All right. Well, thanks, Clint. Hold on, or you get a 5 minutes here to get some water or whatever you need. Folks, come up with some good questions for Clint here. He's a wealth of information, and I'm glad to have him on the show tonight. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to put out the call-in number if you want to call in by phone, or you can just type in a question for him, and I'll relay it to him in the chat room. We'll be right back.
You are listening to I Libertarian, Wednesday nights, midnight on the East Coast, 9 p.m. on the West, on the Talk Shoe Radio Network. Give us a call down at the studio, area code 724-444-7444, and the call ID number is 95724#. I Libertarian, we're listening to you.
I need it.
You want freedom. You want justice. And you need Just Us Scooters. That's right. If you've got an old scooter or moped that's sitting in your garage collecting dust, take it down to Just Us Scooters here in Port St. Lucie, and they'll fix that thing up to outrun even the fastest hog. In fact, they even have a whole line of brand new and remodeled scooters and mopeds available for purchase. Give them a call here in Port St. Lucie at 772-359-0551. Because nothing says freedom like 90 miles to the gallon. You're listening to I Libertarian. Wednesday nights, midnight on the East Coast, 9 p.m. on the West, on the Talk Shoe Radio Network. Give us a call down at the studio, area code 724-444-7444. The call ID number is 95724-POUND. I Libertarian, we're listening to you.
Okay, and we are back. We are talking with Clint Richardson from We Are Change Utah and the filmmaker behind the documentary Corporation Nation. Hey, Clint. You still there? You back?
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you a little bit, because when I was talking to you on email, you said that you're not a big fan of Ron Paul, and you even asked me if you should avoid the subject, and I said, no, you should, I don't ever want anybody to avoid a subject on the show. Now, let me just preface this by saying that Ron Paul is a Republican. And not a libertarian. He used to be a libertarian. He used to be. He was once the libertarian presidential candidate, but that was a long time ago. And since then, he's decided that, you know, as much as he loves the libertarians, that they're not going anywhere. And so he jumped ship over to the Republicans. You know, I still might vote for him just because the reason why I would vote for him is because he seems to have an honest track record. When he says, you know, he's going to vote for something, then he votes for it. When he says he doesn't, he's not going to vote for something, he doesn't vote for it. He's kind of had a good track record of voting for personal liberty and voting against foreign intervention and foreign aid and these other things that bother me. But you apparently don't like them, and I've heard few people say they don't like him, and it's either they say because he's crazy or because he's a Masonic Satanist, because he, you know, did a weird handshake one time on TV or threw up the devil horns. But you seem like a pretty intelligent person, so I'm assuming you have something better than that, and I'd love to hear it. Why don't you go ahead and tell me why you don't like Ron Paul?
Well, let's be clear. I don't dislike the guy. I think that my you know, and this is opinion. What I'm going to tell you right now, what I think is, well, how do I explain? I think that Ron Paul, in another situation, in another time, would be a very wonderful person to have as a leader. I really believe that. And I will say that I have several instances, including some friends who witnessed it firsthand, of the Masonic handshakes. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that all people who get into Masonry are bad or good or whatever. But I do find that important, considering the history of the country and the history of the founding fathers, as well, a lot of them being Masons. What I think, and this, again, this is from Walter Burian, who is the guru, the person probably most responsible for the limited exposure of this comprehensive annual financial report, which we're talking about. It's been his life, and he has suffered greatly for it. He's had his children kidnapped, all three of them. He's had his dog shot. He's had pop shots taken at him. He's had people killed in front of him in prison. This guy has been through more than most people could possibly handle, and he's still somehow sane and rational and still talks about this. He was one of the first tenants in the World Trade Center. He was one of the most highly respected commodities trading advisors in the country. Okay, so just to give you an idea of who this guy is, he's got the credentials. What he did was he approached Ron Paul, thinking that Ron Paul would be more than willing to expose what we're talking about here today. So he approached Ron Paul and said, "Well, here's the comprehensive annual financial report of the Federal Reserve." Okay? Understand that the comprehensive annual financial report, again, a required by federal law document that is required by all corporations from Target to Walmart to Monsanto to Kentucky to the state of Minnesota to the federal government to the Federal Reserve. And this is very important because I have in front of me right now the 2009 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for the Federal Reserve. It is literally the audit of the Federal Reserve. So it's a 530.
I see where you're going with this.
It's a 530 something page document, okay, that goes through all the gold holdings, how the interest on the Federal Reserve is paid, and it's actually not it's collected by them, but it's also paid to the Treasury. It's got every bit of history and information that you'd possibly want about the Federal Reserve, all the structure, everything. I invite people to go find it and read it. It's 530 pages. If you really want to know what the Federal Reserve is, read the audit of the Fed. Okay, that is the comprehensive annual financial report. Likewise, if you want to see how much money your city, your county, or your state, or your school district, or pension funds, or anything else, go pull up the comprehensive annual financial report for your city or state or county. It's that simple. Okay, it's federal law. It has to be there. So when Walter approached Ron Paul, Ron Paul said, "Oh, well, I can't really do that because I have a family. I can't risk my career by putting the most top secret information up on the blogosphere, on the website, and expose this, because it is the golden rule in government that you do not talk about the comprehensive annual financial reports. No one talks about this report." Okay? The Walter, I told you what happened to Walter. The other guy that was exposing this was actually a federal auditor, and he was killed. He was killed. He's still got a website. His website is Kafferman, CAFRMAN.com. You go there, and he tells you how to, you know, he pulls up some reports, and he was starting to get into it just as much as Walter, and he was killed. Walter's made quite a name for himself, so killing Walter would probably be more trouble than it was worth. So instead, they've at every turn robbed him of any money that he gets, because if he had money, he'd be extremely dangerous. They've stolen his land, his property, his children, his, you know, taken the lives of people he knows, and he's constantly in and out of court for absolutely no reason. They've even taken his some of his pension from the military, which is actually against the law, and he can't do anything about it. There's no one to protect him. There's no one to help him. There's only government pushing him down. So what I'm telling you with regards to Ron Paul is that the audit of the Federal Reserve is right there in front of everybody's noses. All you have to do is pull it up. It's the Board of Directors' annual report, the financial statements for the Federal Reserve. It's on their website. Simple as that. 530 pages of pure nightmarish truth right there. And it's federal law. They have to do it. So – When Walter approached Ron Paul to put that on his website, Ron Paul wholeheartedly said, absolutely not. I have a career and a family to protect. And so that reason alone, I do not believe that Ron Paul is on my side or on your side or on anybody's side, because he knows that the audit of the Fed is right there in front of everybody, and yet he won't say one word about it. Therefore, I cannot support the man until he comes out and says, okay, I'm going to be a hero now, a real hero, a real patriot, and I'm going to tell people, hey, here it is. Let's look at it. Here's what's going on. Until that point, Ron Paul is a fraud, and that's my take on it.
You know what? I hear what I absolutely hear what you're saying, and I don't doubt what you're saying is true in any way. And it's very interesting that you say that. And there's a couple of interesting things you said there, and I want to go for them a little bit at a time. But you said that that he wouldn't look at this audit. Now, one of the big things that he's doing right now in government is trying to audit the Federal Reserve. Well, you're saying, you know, he has the audit, it's there, he doesn't need to go through all this hoops.
The audit of the Federal Reserve is called the for 2009, I don't think 2010 has come out yet. It's the 96th annual report of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. I'm looking at it right now. And it says, this publication is available from the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, Publications Fulfillment, Washington, D.C. It is also available on the board's website at www.federalreserve.gov. And the first page, the first thing that is said is from Ben Bernanke, chairman of the Federal Reserve. It says, to the Speaker of the House of Representatives, pursuant to the requirements of Section 10 of the Federal Reserve Act, I am pleased to submit the 96th Annual Report of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. This report covers operations of the Board during calendar year 2009. And if you go through this report, you can see how much money the Federal Reserve has made over the years since 1917. It has every figure listed. It shows gold certificates. One of the things that's really going to make people mad if they get into this is they're going to find that the law actually states that the price of gold is set by law by the Treasury at $42.29. It has not moved in a long time, and it won't move for a long time. The market price of gold is completely speculative. It has no bearing on the actual lawful price of gold. So the Federal Reserve is holding literally $500 billion worth of gold, according to the stock market price, and on the lawful price, it's holding $11 billion worth at the $42.29 price. So you can figure out if gold's at $1,500 today, you know how much that is. It's a lot of money. So basically, the Federal Reserve is holding gold certificates. Those certificates are at any time, they can turn those in for the actual physical gold, which the Treasury is holding. And it says so right in the report. All of this information is right in the report. So I'm telling you that if you've got gold, it's worth $42.29, period. Whatever the speculation price is, you know, congratulations. But the law says differently. So all of these little things are in there, and everything you could want to know.
So it's actually the speculation price only accounts for, say, like gold commodities, and not for actual gold itself. Then, is what you're saying?
Yeah, the speculation. I mean, I compare it to Darth Vader. You know, if I have an original 1977 Darth Vader figure that's still in a box, there's some schmuck out there who'll pay, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for it because they collect it. It's valuable to them. It's a false sense of scarcity. It's a scarce item. When you create a false sense of scarcity in any product, the price is going to go through the roof. This is why diamonds, you know, you can go to Africa and scoop diamonds up off the beach. the truth about diamonds is that they're worthless. They're absolutely worthless, and yet we pay thousands and thousands of dollars. I got quotes from Cecil Rhodes that says we must keep the diamond price, we must keep the illusion of scarcity in the public eye, or the diamond business will go bankrupt. They're worthless. They're nothing. They're rocks. I like to say they're as valuable they're as rare as coal, because diamonds, coal turns into diamonds. It's the whole thing is based on false scarcity, essentially. And like I said, all this information, if you read the dang thing, good luck on that, because it's hard to stomach a lot of it. But you'll get the audit of the Federal Reserve right there in the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. You'll get the audit of any corporation. Go type in Target Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. You'll get the financial statements for the corporation called Target Incorporated. Likewise, Wisconsin. I went through the Wisconsin, another thing on my blog, on realityblogger.wordpress.com. I went through several CAFRs and explained how they work so that other people could look at that and say, oh, okay, I found $86 billion extra money in the state of Wisconsin as they're saying they're bankrupt. And that's just the state government, not the cities, counties, municipalities, school districts, pension funds, and everything else. So what I'm saying is that the government has so much money tied up in these investments, and cash, and foreign cash. Every possible currency that you can imagine in the world, government has massive hedge holdings. They're hedging the dollar on those on those foreign currencies. Massive amounts, billions and billions and trillions of dollars in foreign currency. Okay, gold, stock investments, real estate. You'd be shocked at how much real estate government actually owns. And if they don't own it, since they got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, these pension funds can actually act as banks, and they're actually mortgaging out the money. They're using that taxpayer money, that investment, and they're giving mortgages to people so that they can buy a house. So technically, the pension fund owns that as well. Like I said, this thing is so huge. The amount of money we're talking about is over 100 trillion. It's a trillion is a million million. You can't even imagine what $1 million is, let alone a million million. And we're talking 100, if not $200 trillion of worldwide investments, ownership of everything. So,
right. Let me get back to this thing with Ron Paul again, though, because we got a little sidetracked here. Now, like you said, your friend Walter Burian was harassed, and his dog was shot, and his family was other things and threatened and
things that I don't even want to say on the radio.
Yeah, no, I know. I hear you on this, and I want to talk about that some more. Well, not that specifically, but that kind of behavior. But if Ron Paul is facing this same sort of persecution, that might explain why he's making this kind of public spectacle out of getting the federal audit instead of actually just taking the federal audit and looking at it, because that way it becomes such a public thing that it isn't just him whistleblowing. It's the American people are behind it, and they going through this process, and this way he protects himself through this publicity of it before actually doing it. That's actually what he's doing, but I just want to put that out there.
I did an interview a couple weeks ago with this state senator, an ex-state senator named Dick LaRosa from New Jersey, and he verified very much so that when he told a friend who was also in government that he was going to go on the radio and talk about these reports, his friend, I think it was a congressman, said, "Wait, nobody talks. What do you mean you're going to talk about it? You're going to talk about it on public? I mean, you mean you're actually going to, when you go and talk to these people, they're scared to death of any disclosure of this because it reveals what I'm telling you. It reveals complete ownership of everything. It reveals massive amounts of money. So what you really got to consider, and this is another hard thing for people to really accept, kind of like the fact that we're screwing ourselves because we are the government. This concept of controlled opposition, this concept of controlling your enemies and your opposition. Ron Paul is the perfect example in my eyes of what we'd call controlled opposition. He serves such a wonderful purpose because people like you and me and everyone else, and then rally behind this guy, despite the fact that there's just no way he's going to win an election, because government has massive investments in a company called Diebold. Diebold is the corporation in which that makes these voting machines that we vote on. Diebold is the unfortunate corporation that makes these machines that Congress cannot see the programming for, and the votes are rigged. So even if Ron Paul, even if more people voted for Ron Paul than did, say, Obama, he wouldn't win. It's rigged. The whole thing is rigged. Every single bit of opposition that comes along, essentially, besides people like you and besides people like me, I have no money. I'm doing this out of pocket. I'm not getting anything for it. The majority of radio station hosts do not get paid. So if you're getting into radio to make money, good luck. You know, yeah. It's not something that you do because you're looking to get paid. It's something you do because you feel like you have to do it, and that's where I am. I have to expose this stuff. I absolutely must. It is now my mission in life. And so what I'm saying is that until you understand this sense of the opposition is generally always controlled. Because when I look at the CAFR, I see that government has, oh, look at there, 500 million shares in General Electric, which owns, NBC. I see the same amounts of investments in Disney, which owns ABC. I see every single media corporation in existence is literally owned by government stock investments. Therefore, government decides what happens in the media. So when you say that the media is a controlled, the media is horrible, well, now you know why. It's a symbiotic relationship between the school system and dumbing down people so that they never can learn this, between the media, between government, and between everything else that falls in between. It is everything is controlled. And once you get that, and you consider that Ron Paul, 99% chance here that he is the best choice of controlled opposition, because he satiates us. He makes us feel like we've got a candidate for the people, even though he's part of a private association, a private corporation called the Republican Party, which is completely unconstitutional. We have this guy who we think is on our side, and we put all our effort into, you know, and our money into this guy, and yet what is it accomplishing? We're still voting for the Republican Party. Why would you want a party to be in politics? Why would you want majority rule? You know, the whole thing just stinks to high heaven to me and feels like a controlled situation. You know, when the government, when the CIA put out a million hits of acid in the 60s, the whole love revolution was exactly what we needed. Did that revolution, that free love and flowers and drugs, is that what stopped the war? Well, no. Not at all. That's not what stopped the Vietnam War. It wasn't even a war. So I guess what I'm saying is that everything that's out there for us to feed on and to put our efforts, when we when we send an email to our congressman, or we send a letter, or we make a phone call, or we go out like we do and we are change and we put our little banners up that say 9/11 was an inside job, it makes us feel like we're doing something. Voting for Ron Paul and being part of his campaign, despite the fact that he's part of the enemy, makes us feel like we're doing something. And as long as we are distracted by one of these many controlled opposition things, we will never, ever get to the root of the problem. And that's my take on Ron Paul.
Well, you know, I feel you on that. I mean, it really is. It's a rigged game. And, you know, what...
This is breaking down the matrix.
I love what you're giving us, man, but you really make it sound so hopeless.
Well, no, I mean, I'll just give you an example. Like, I thought about it, and I decided, you know, the only... I still feel funny saying this, but I've got a new website up, and I haven't done anything with it yet, but I've got it all written out. And I have a website called Clint 4P. Clint,
yeah,
C-L-I-N-T.
I checked that out before we started the show.
4P, I'm running for president. All right? I am running for president because I've got it all figured out, man. I know all this information. And, you know,
But the voting machines are rigged, man.
Well, that's the whole point of running for president, is to say, hey, I can't win. I'm here to say I can't win because the voting machines are rigged. Because private corporations are your parties. You're supporting an association of really evil bastards, essentially. You know, what are you thinking? Why do you want majority rule? All these things that I actually go out and teach people and go to each county. Hopefully I can start touring if I can get someone to support me, and actually go and pull up, you know, hey, I'm in Tennessee. Here's your CAFR. Here's what your government has. Really what it boils down to is people don't understand this. And, you know, you've heard, you're on the West Coast, correct?
I'm on the East Coast right now.
Oh, you're on the East Coast. I'm sorry. Well, I grew up in California, so we had something called a proposition. Other states have initiatives and other types of ballot, you know, votes. So what a proposition in California is it's when the people write up a law and the people vote on the law. You know, it's like a concept that has gone out the window. And so lately you have corporations writing these propositions and simply hiring other corporations to get all the signatures required to get those initiatives and those propositions on the ballot. And that's what you vote for. But if the people were to do a grassroots movement and actually create laws for their state, because one of our biggest problems as people is that we don't have the law on our side. These guys in government, they're acting within the laws that they create for themselves. We have to fight them from within the law that they create for us while they operate pretty much independently from that law. We have no chance of changing anything by sending a letter to our congressman, because they're not working for us. They're working for the corporation. So doesn't it make sense that someone like me, or it doesn't have to be me, it can be anybody who has no stock investments in anything, who has no corporate interest whatsoever, and who only has an interest in the people, and to change things to where all these investments are actually benefiting the people, doesn't it make sense that you wouldn't vote for someone like Ron Paul, a millionaire? Wouldn't you vote for someone who's poor and goes through all the hell that people like me and Walter and other people who've, you know, been beaten down, Edgar Steele and everybody that's in jail for tax protest? Doesn't it make sense that those are the people that you want in government, because they're the only people that will actually represent people?
Well, I guess there's still Dennis Kucinich then.
Yeah, who's he married?
Hey, listen, we got a question. We got someone calling in. This is Kevin Tinfoil, and he's got a question for you. So,
all right.
Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, Clint Richardson, correct?
Yes, sir.
I guess what I want to ask was, since you were just speaking on law and how it's all like geared towards keeping their system intact, what's the point of then creating new laws? It would seem that you would then be doing, and it wouldn't it just allow in the future someone to just come along and then try and twist those laws once again?
Well, once a law is put on the ballot, so I mean, let's examine how law is created. Law is pretty much created in courts. Now, again, on this article that I have up on my blog called "The United States a Corporation," there's three videos on there where some people in LA did a Freedom of Information Act and actually received all the information they asked for, including the fact that courts in LA and everywhere, it turns out, are private corporations. They're not acting within the law that you and I think of. They're acting within code, UCC code. They're acting in something completely different than what is law or constitutionality. The Constitution is out the window. You cannot use the Constitution as a defense. Okay, that's been proven many times as a precedent in court. So when we're talking about law, the only real law is what the people create. If your senator or your congressman create a law, it's actually a code. It's not law. Okay, it's something that requires the consent of the people. Whereas if the people create a law, it is the truest form of law, because the people created it and voted on it. So when your congressmen and your senators get together, or worse, when your president creates a presidential directive and calls it the law, well, he has no authority to really do that, because his authority is only that 10-mile stretch of federal land. Likewise, Congress, anything Congress creates is statutory law and prima facie law. You'll find that most of the U.S. code, including the IRS, and everything from Homeland Security to domestic security, is in fact a presidential executive office. It is not law. It is completely requires the consent of the voting public. So the point is that when the people get together and actually create the law and then vote it into law, there's not really a way to get around that. So once the people have a law on their side, then these politicians better watch out. I mean, is basically what it boils down to. You know, we can get into grand juries and you know, the sort of alternatives to the court of equity that we suffer in. But yeah, I mean, you understand the difference between what law is and what a code is, and you understand what I'm saying.
I get where you're going with that, but then who is it specifically then the people that would then create that authority, and then who would then, since authority is pretty much a violent capability to then enforce some sort of statute or code or whatever and law, who would then go about enforcing that?
Well, that's the real question, isn't it? That's the real difficult thing to really answer, because yeah, I mean, how many quotes can you think of offhand that say, essentially, when, you know, the Tree of Liberty quote, that the blood of patriots and politicians must be shed. When the government is a private corporation, as it is, and is not acting in any way in the public interest, what is it that keeps people from not tearing it apart? And my answer to that is going back to Ron Paul and going, is this concept of hope and change. All right, Obama's little thing where he's trying to somehow make you think that he's going to somehow legislate hope. Well, you can't. Hope is a curse, really, because as long as we hope that things are going to change, we're just all going to sit back and watch as things get worse and worse and worse. So yeah, eventually the people are going to have to do something. And my suggestion is exactly what I'm saying. Start creating their own law. Start start having more grand juries, start getting involved, because otherwise we're all just going to sit back and watch all this happen. So the difficult thing to answer is, you know, this fine line between, you know, getting a rope and hanging these guys and trying to act within the law that they don't even act within. So yeah, it's a catch 22. We're stuck. We're stuck, and we what do you do? Well, I'm doing the only thing I know to do, and that is to try to take over the presidency, and in the meantime, educate people. And I'll have a whole thing on that. You know, it goes much deeper. Because essentially the Constitution, again, I don't have time to get into it, but the Constitution was suspended in 1933. And if you read the Constitution, it actually says in the Constitution that the Constitution can be suspended by act of Congress and president can become essentially the king. Well, that's what happened with Franklin Delano Roosevelt with his New Deal. The president became king by declaring a state of a permanent emergency, and we've been in that situation ever since. This is why the president can create all these executive orders, which he calls law. This is why Congress doesn't read the bills that are put in front of them, because they're really only there for show. It's a game. It's a construct. It's not real. The president appoints all of the power brokers. When you elect a president, the president appoints every single person in the federal government, and then those people appoint every single person under them. Okay, you're voting for one man, and then that one man places everybody else in government. It's ridiculous the way this system works. And we fight for it as if it's some great, wonderful system. It's probably one of the worst tyrannical systems I can think of. And you read some of the quotes from the founding fathers. They didn't want the Constitution. They didn't want the judicial and the legislative and especially the executive. If you read their actual notes and their journals, you'll find a completely different story than what we've been taught. So I could ramble on about this for hours. I apologize.
Is that clearing things up for you, Kevin? Do you have any more questions for him that you'd like to ask?
Yeah, I guess I would love to actually mention that, like, I think that, like, as of late, the profit motive, where it used to help kind of expand the move of a lot of the things when it came to, say, technology and how society would quote-unquote advance, now, like, before it was, like, religion that held back, say, things like science. Now it's, like, non-disclosure agreements and... say, like, the ability of, like, say, someone from Microsoft and AT&T and Sony, say the three of them all decide to get together and work out some awesome piece of equipment. And they're technically not allowed to actually even do that because they can't share software, they can't share ideas. And I'm kind of curious as to what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I mean, it's once you consider and once you see these figures for yourself, you realize, okay, if government really does own that much stock in these companies, all the rules that you're talking about, all the non-disclosure agreements and all of that, that is coming from government. That they are setting the laws that allow that to happen. So you don't have to wonder really why these things happen anymore. You can just consider that government owns the corporations, votes by proxy in everything that happens. So they vote for the board of directors. The board of directors then votes on who the CEO is. Okay, so government has control over who the CEO of a corporation is going to be. This is why the CEO of a corporation, let's say Monsanto, becomes the head of the FDA, passes the bills they write while they're working for Monsanto, and then gets rehired by Monsanto at a much larger salary. I mean, it's such a simple concept once you grasp this, that everything that happens from what you were just talking about with non-disclosure agreements and all the corruption in courts. Courts are private corporations. They are not there to do anything for the people. If you get representation through a barred attorney, you are admitting to the court that you are not sane, you are not fit to represent yourself. You've just given yourself up to the court. The court can do anything they want with you. So, likewise, if you don't present law into the court doesn't have to recognize any law it doesn't want to. Even if the judge knows you're innocent, he will say you're guilty unless you bring that precedent or that law into court. So, like I said, the simple answer to what you just asked is government is the one that is making all these little regulations and contracts and everything else in order to keep the continuity of business flowing. I'll give you a good example here. One of the things that governments have, if you look at your own city or county or state, you'll find something almost in every report I've found called a risk management fund. Okay, government works on a series of funds. So you'll have a golf course fund where they put lots of taxpayer money into, and it'll just build and build and build and get bigger. Well, likewise, they have a water fund and all these other funds. They have a risk management fund. Into the risk management fund, they're putting massive, massive amounts of taxpayer money, and they're investing it, just like in any other fund, just like in a pension fund. And that money is specifically used. This cracked me up when I learned this. It's specifically used for lawsuits and tort claims against the corporation, the city corporation or the state or the county. So when you sue the city there and you win, they're accessing that fund to pay for the lawsuit. Likewise, they pass laws in each corporation or municipality that says if you sue the city, you can only sue for a certain amount. So here's government with a taxpayer-funded fund that no taxpayers even know about, setting aside money for lawsuits and tort claims, and setting the laws that say you can only sue for so much so that we never run out of money in that fund and we can keep investing it. So again, you see the conflict of interest. The way things really work is exactly how I told you in every case. The whole thing is, it's like a huge business plan. Government is run on this huge plan for business. It certainly isn't broke, I'll tell you that much. Like I said, if you scour my blog, you'll see a bunch of CAFR, C-A-F-R posts, as well as a Wisconsin post that, again, $86 billion just sitting there in these funds invested. And, you know, you go to California, it's going to be close to a trillion, probably. So, you know, like I said, this answers, once you grasp this, it really does answer any question you have. And that's the beauty of it. And it's right there, federal law, you can pull it up for your own city. By the way, if you know, I haven't mentioned that the actual website is thecorporationnation.com. So thecorporationnation.com is where the movie is, and again, I did this for free. I'm not expecting any money out of it. So please watch it and understand the things we're talking about tonight, because really, it's you know what? It sounds daunting, and I know it sounds like it's a hopeless thing, but part of being free and part of being happy in your freedom is knowledge. I can't stress that enough, because right now I feel great because I don't have to switch from radio dial to radio dial. I don't have to turn on Alex Jones and listen to him banter and scare me in order to understand what the heck's going on around me. I can see it all right now. And it's only really from understanding this, because once I understood this, everything else fell into place. All the questions I had fell into place because government owns it all. It's simple as that. I can talk, can't I? Did I lose the connection? Well, if anyone's still there, I just became the host. Like I said, the websites are the Corporation Nation, thecorporationnation.com, Reality Blogger with one G, realityblogger.wordpress.com, and the title of the corporation one is The United States, a Corporation. There's a lot of stuff on there. The consent article is very important. And vote for Clint as President of the United States. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on the show, if anyone's still there. And hey, take care. Please watch the video and you know, pull up the CAFRs for your own government and challenge your local politicians, your city council, and everybody else. Show them the money that they're missing, because you'll find a lot of city council members do not know this is happening. A lot of people are innocent in this, but a lot are guilty. So type in comprehensive annual financial report, spell it out, and then put your city and put a year, and generally you'll find the report. So,
can you hear me?
Anyway, thanks. I don't know what happened to you guys, but take care, and you know, good luck to us all.
724-444-7444.
You're listening to I Libertarian, Wednesday nights, midnight on the East Coast, 9 p.m. on the West, on the Talk Shoe Radio Network. Give us a call down at the studio, area code 724-444-7444. And the call ID number is 95724-POUND. I, Libertarian, we're listening to you.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when...
Hey, folks. This is the King for Mayor here.
There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry.
You know what? I am too. I try not to get all doom and gloomy on my radio show, just because there's so many other people out there doing that already. I don't think people need that. But personally, you know, amongst friends and stuff, you know, I've been following it. I've followed it 5 years now. Covert stuff going on, and have you heard of something called Operation Black Jack? Yeah, it ran in the